the text portion, I want to take out of Matthew 5 again. I believe it's in verse 33 through 37 there. But what does our speech or our talk or the things that we say reveal about our character? Have you ever thought about that? That the things that we say is really a window into our character. Things we say and how we live up to what we say. That consistency. One thing that's very confusing is when we say one thing and do another. The people believe what we do more than what we say. Other people do. What do my words reveal about me? And how can we as Christians demonstrate Christ-likeness in our speech? There's a lot of ways that we can do that, probably. But the gist of it is, of the message or the thought, is to be people of integrity and to live what we say we will do. You know, there was this, in the Old Testament, when somebody wanted to make something sure, if there was a real estate transaction or one person promises another person and they want to make sure, they would swear by something greater than themselves to emphasize how sure they were promising to do whatever they were going to do. And I did not actually look at the Sunday school lesson before I studied for the message, which was my fault. And I didn't realize that our Sunday school lesson had some of this content in it this morning. But we're going to go ahead anyway. In the Old Testament, there's some things given on oaths and promises. In Numbers 30, verses 1 and 2, it says, "And Moses spake unto the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, This is what the Lord said. If a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath, to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth." See, God listens to what we say. And when we make a promise, God holds people to that, holds us to that. Exodus 20, verse 7, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." And I'm not going to, I'll come back to that verse later. But let's go to Matthew 5, verse 33. This is the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus is talking about here on the swearing of oaths. It was very common for God's people at that time to swear by something greater than themselves. It says, Jesus says, again, "You have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea. If you say yes, then mean yes. If you say no, mean no. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." That the English terms for oath and vow are sometimes used interchangeably. Oath and a vow. But the Old and the New Testament employ distinct vocabulary for each concept, or they do. Oaths and vows, though oaths and vows are clearly related, in Numbers 30, verse 2, which was one of the first verses I read, An oath refers to a promise made in God's presence to another human party, whereas a vow, as differentiated here in Scripture, is a promise that's made directly to God. But swearing of, or the an oath is that which has been pledged or promised with an oath, a fence, this is Strong's dictionary, a limit or a sacred restraint. It's using God, something greater than ourself to put emphasis on our word, what we're going to say. And a lot of times we swear on the Bible, or we swear by God, I will do this, or, you know, whatever. But what happens if we don't follow through with that then? Isn't that that's a way of taking God's name in vain? We'll try to get to that a little bit later. But forswearing has the thought of to swear falsely, to commit perjury, or that is to, it's lying after we've said that we would tell the truth by God or by heaven or by my head or my hair or whatever I can see, you know. But it's, sometimes we can take things to add emphasis to what we say, and then if we lie under oath, it's a way of taking God's name in vain. Matthew 23:16 says, "Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. You fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing." This was the Pharisees playing word games here. "Whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing. But whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon it," or the altar, "he is guilty. You fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar, sweareth by it and by all things thereon. And whoso shall swear by the temple, sweareth by it and by him that dwelleth therein. And he that shall swear by heaven, sweareth by the throne of God and by him that sitteth thereon. Jesus is just saying that it's all the same. You know, even if you differentiate it, God looks at it all the same. Now Peter, well, this is an example here in Matthew 26, verse 69. Peter was very used to this, this concept of binding his word with an oath. It says, "Now Peter sat without in the palace." This is after Jesus was taken in. Peter sat outside, and a girl came to him and said, "You were with Jesus. You were with Jesus." But he denied, Peter denied before them all, saying, "I know not what thou sayest." And when he was gone out into the porch, he decided to get away from her. So he went out on the back deck, maybe. "When he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him and said unto them that were there," so they're in the group that was there, "This fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth." And again he denied with an oath, "I do not know the man." What did the oath say? I don't know. But by God, I swear I don't know this man. Well, he was lying. right? Or whatever he used. But with an oath, he said, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by and said to Peter, surely thou also art one of them, for thy speech bewrayeth thee. We can tell by the way you speak that you talk like this man, and we know that you are with him, or we suspect it. So then Peter heard that his speech was telling on him, so he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter remembered his promise that he had told Jesus not very long ago that he would die. He would go all the way with him and die. And here he found himself tangled up in a terrible situation. And we can find ourselves in situations like that. We have good intentions, but we can find ourselves going into a little bit of a slippery spot sometimes too. Going into Hebrews 6, verse 13 and 14, this is our Sunday school lesson covered some of this morning. But it's the certainty of God's promise, the certainty, the guarantee. For when God made promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no greater, he swore by himself. How is God going to swear by something greater than himself? It doesn't work, right? But God is God. And for God to take his own name in vain, he's not going to do that. He won't. But he said, surely blessing I will bless thee, and multiplying I will multiply thee. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. That was Abraham that said that did that. Abraham was, he persevered. He believed God's promise that God would do what he said. And Abraham lived, I'm not sure. He waited on this promise for 100, well, until he was 100 years old. To have his son that God said he would have, and he believed it. God tested him all the way up till he was past, till he was, Abraham didn't know if he would live long enough for God to do his promise, but he still believed that God would do his promise because God said he would. Now verse 16, this is how men look at it. For men truly, or verily means truly, for men truly swear by the greater, something greater than themselves, and an oath for confirmation to prove that they're going to tell the truth is to them an end of all strife. Does it work? Does it work? Going on to James 5, verse 12, it says, above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, and your nay, nay. Let your yes be yes, and your no be no, lest you fall into condemnation. All right, so those were different, those were some teachings on the non-swearing of oaths that we read in Scripture. But in Exodus 20, verse 7, they were commanded not to take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And sometimes there's things that are beyond our control. We are not God, so we cannot control time. We cannot control circumstances. We cannot control many things in life. And sometimes we want to emphasize emphasize by something greater than ourselves that we will do this. Well, yeah. There's in James 5, it also talks about, I think it's 5, you know, if anyone wants to go into such and such a city and buy and sell and do this and that, that they should say, if the Lord wills. Because we don't, you don't know if you will even be alive tomorrow. Qualify it by Lord willing. I think someone said that in Sunday school this morning, that we should qualify our promises for certain things by if the Lord wills. If we emphasize our self, our promises, with an oath or by something greater, by God's name, for example, and don't do it, then we take his name in vain. Just invoking his name doesn't mean that things can't change. Anyway, in James 5, verse 12, it says, let your yes be yes and your no be no, lest you fall into condemnation. That word condemnation there is very interesting. The Greek word for that is hypocrisis, meaning it's acting under a feigned part. It means it's a form of hypocrisy or being a hypocrite, saying something and not doing it, or professing something and not doing it. So if we swear and by something and we don't do it, then we become a form of a hypocrite, I guess you could say. Swearing an oath is using the sureness of the name of God, the supernatural or the sacred, and binding ourselves to that to create more value to our word. Does this increase the guarantee of truthfulness? Well, if we take Hebrews 6, verse 16, you know, where men truly, when they take an oath for confirmation, it's the end of the matter. Our courts are full of people who lie under oath. It doesn't increase the guarantee of truthfulness. Is corruption temporarily erased in a corrupt person who uses the oath? No, it's not. If a person is corrupt before they come into the situation, they're probably going to be corrupt with using God's name to bind their word. The name and reputation of God dishonored because of lying and the breaking of promises under oath? Absolutely, we would say it is. Although we might not look at it that way, I think God looks at it that way. You used my name to bind yourself to tell the truth, but then you didn't tell the truth, so now you made yourself a liar, but you drug me into it too, or my name into it. It causes God's name to be associated with a lie. A liar that swears an oath to be truthful becomes a hypocrite. He is not genuinely changed just because he used the oath. He is only using the oath to appear as an honest person. Swearing oaths allows for compartmentalization of character. It allows for pockets of dishonesty in some areas of life while requiring absolute honesty and transparency in others. So as Christians, honest communication, let your yes be yes and your no, no. You know, God, when he told Abraham, I don't know how he did this, but he just basically told Abraham, I will do this because I am God. I am God, and I will do this. And Abraham believed God. And as Christians, as little Christ, in an effort to be like Christ, Letting our yes be yes means that we will do this because we said we will do this. That's our life is, our yes is just as binding. If I say I will do it, I will do it. And if I say I won't do it, I won't do it. It has to do with a genuineness of character. But if we allow dishonesty in some areas of our life, and other areas we are really, are, if we compartmentalize certain areas, then just swearing an oath to be honest in this area may or may not work, but it doesn't make us, it doesn't cleanse us or make us a genuine, doesn't repair our character and make it genuine all the way through just because we use an oath. But a genuine character produces consistent results. Untruth or dishonesty in any form is not a representative of, is not representative of Christ. You know, in Revelations 4, I'm not sure of the verse there, 11 or 13, something like that, but it talks about how Satan, how in heaven there will not be any form of a lie, because Satan is the author or the father of lies. And Jesus had a discussion with the Pharisees on that as well. But lying is not from above. Dishonesty is a perversion of truth, which is from, Satan is the father of lies. God is the author of truth. Our words and communication are a form of our character. What are some examples of shady communication? And for many of us, we probably have been guilty of doing some, of saying some things already and not following through with it. Sometimes it's unintentional, or many times it is unintentional. But the person that we told something to and didn't follow through on has a sour taste in their mouth, or a sour experience with working with us. An unfulfilled promise that a parent makes to a child is a difficult experience for the child. As parents, that's something we need to watch for, is promises that we've made to our children to fulfill them. If we say that we will do it, then do it. And it's something that I need to keep close tabs on for myself. Our children remember that. They will remember that, and you can probably remember things in your childhood or of times when you felt let down by somebody who made a promise. In business, we need to fulfill promises, such as making sure if we say tell someone we're going to call them back, then we need to call them back. You've probably gone to a place and they said, I'll call you back, and you are still waiting for them to call you back. You probably all have had that experience. It's not very fun, but if you're the one in business, make sure you do everything in your power to call somebody back if you tell them that you will, or if you'll be at a certain place at a certain time, do everything you can to do that, or at least communicate, change of plans ahead of time. Another form of shady communication is manipulation or ulterior motives. Nobody likes to be used or manipulated, but acting out a part to get someone to do something for you is a form of shady communication. You know, as a young boy, I was guilty of some of this. I had a mom who was very easily manipulated, and I think she's forgiven me. I hope so. But I would come home from work. I didn't have any sisters, and so we had to wash dishes and do all the housework that sisters normally would do. But I would come home from work, probably 11, 12, 13, somewhere in there. And we'd be eating supper, And I did not want to do the dishes afterwards. So the form of communication that I used to communicate to Mom that this wasn't going to work was that I would sit there and act like I was going to sleep. And this was not real, but I would act like I was going to sleep. Mom would take pity on this poor boy who's been working all day, and she'd say, "Well, you don't have to do the dishes tonight." Well, that was exactly what this person wanted to say, wanted to hear. And that was a form of manipulation. It was not a good, wasn't a good thing. Some people have done this already. They would apologize and act very repentant to escape certain punishments that were coming their way. And that usually worked better with one parent than the other parent, but it's still a form of manipulation, and that can be done other ways. That type of action can translate into not just children to their parents, but it can translate into other relationships, personal relationships between people that should know better. Flattery is another form of manipulation. There's a difference between a genuine compliment and flattery, to buttering somebody up to make them do something that you want. But making someone feel good to get something from them, like, "Grandma, I love you. You're the best grandma ever. Now, can I borrow your car?" that's probably didn't happen that quite that fast, but I know of someone who did that, took advantage of this person. But it wasn't me. That type of thing can happen. Another thing, technicalities or shady technicalities, lies, could be portraying something that is technically true but is out of context. Technically true but out of context. This is an example, but selling a blind cow with the apology or disclaimer that she doesn't look too good from my perspective, but people are different and it might not bother you. The cow doesn't look too good. So one person takes that as the cow is ugly, but what you really meant was that it was blind and couldn't see. Or you could tell somebody, if you're at their place, you could tell them that they have a very lovely view as you turn around. You have a lovely view here. They take it as you're meaning that they have a beautiful place, and you are actually meaning that it's really nice because you're not in it. And that's another form of taking something out of context. But the Pharisees did that, took things out of context sometimes. And the temptation for us is to reinterpret certain terms, maybe in the tax code, or certain terms in how we, to the best of my knowledge, is a term that can be very elastic sometimes. We try not to think too hard so that our knowledge isn't very much, right? That's sometimes something we can do. But it's a form of being shady. One thing as Christians we need to remember is that our testimony is our testimony for Christ is influenced by how we live our life, what we say and how we live. Peter had that testimony. The girl told him that you also are one of them because your speech is like his. Your speech tells us that. And our speech and communication shows our character. And a genuine character that seeks to follow Christ will seek to be honest and trustworthy in all of our communication. There should be no compartmentalization of character. our character should be the same throughout. You know, if we compartmentalize our character, sometimes we have some nasty surprises that we try to keep hidden. The hypocrite, or a hypocrite, is one who portrays one thing but holds different surprises inside, is somebody else. So take heed lest you fall into condemnation or into that hypocrisy. The genuine character will not need an oath to bind them to tell the truth, because their life is one of truth. Our life is one of truth and not of hypocrisy. What is our communication telling about us? What do those who know us best have to say about us? And this is something that I need as much as anyone. It's easy for me to become technical and to twist context, and it's very, very easy for me to do that. But it's not right. You know, our communication tells on us. It really does. Our communication is something that we, whether it's spoken or unspoken, we are communicating with those around us. And what would they say about us? Are we willing to shortchange ourselves because of a promise that we've made? Are we willing to take the bad end of the deal sometimes because of a promise that we've made? I remember I was trying to make a little extra money to pay off some bills faster, and I had an opportunity to make some money. It was a little bit of a side project, and I built a custom building for a man. He was a doctor, or a dentist, that wanted something out of the ordinary that we didn't build, and so I built it on my own. And it had to fit up against his house under the eave or his trailer. He had a farm, and he wanted to put this on his trailer or on his deck to fit under his eave there. And in order to do it, we had to build it with a roof that was too flat. It was really too flat. And against better knowledge, I built this building with this thing too flat. And it all worked. We got it delivered and everything worked well. Except 2 years later, he comes back and his roof was leaking, had been leaking for a long time. And it was moldy inside. And he didn't spend a lot of time there at this place, so it wasn't something that he noticed too much. But he spent a lot of time there, and he came there one day and saw that it was moldy and everything was just really bad. So he comes back, and I didn't know what to do. It was really bad. It was a really bad deal. Anyway, so it was a lesson. It was a kind of an expensive lesson for me. But we ended up getting him another building. We had to put it at a different spot. Had to take this other one and throw it away. It was just bad because of all the leaking problems. We put another building over there, and he was happy. But it was a form of, I felt, doing something, because I told him I would provide him with a building, and the first one turned out bad, that we had to do something different. It was a form of sacrifice, I felt at the time. But it was a good experience. It was a very, very good experience, and I learned some lessons out of it. It all turned out better than I could hope. The man was nice enough that he actually came back later and paid some towards the other building, and he ended up being—he's a good friend. But are we willing, are we willing to let our yay be yay if we say we're going to do something to provide, to do what we say we will do? Are we willing, if we say we won't do something, to hold fast to that and to let our no be no also? I don't know. Look in your own life. Are there things that, are there some promises that you've made, or some things that have happened that you should do better, that I should do better? I encourage you, look in the scriptures and let your yea be yea and your nay, nay. Let's stand for prayer.